Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. There's no getting around it. We are multicultural and a multilingual society, perhaps more than in recent generations. Roughly one in five school-aged children in the United States speaks a language other than English at home. Usually that language is Spanish. Now some schools in Illinois and across the nation are seeking to address this demographic shift by ramping up bilingual education programs. A couple of elementary schools in Urbana, for example, are piloting a dual language program teaching kindergarten classes in both English and Spanish, mostly in Spanish. The goal is not to merely teach a foreign language, but to help kids to be biliterate, to learn in multiple languages. Today on the program, we will learn more about such efforts and explore the potential benefits and challenges of learning in more than one language and whether it helps or hinders a child's proficiency in one or the other. In a few minutes, we'll talk it over with Yuri Bauer and Georgia Garcia from the College of Education at the University of Illinois and Joseph Wiemelt, interim principal at Urbana High School. But first, a report from Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers about how such bilingual education programs, once seen as a way to teach English to kids learning it as a second language, are now also designed, in some cases, to prepare all students to be bilingual and biliterate.
¿Cómo se llama? ¿Qué dice ahí, Marina?
Dama. At Urbana's Leal Elementary School, kindergarten teacher Luz Rios goes through a list of phrases and words in Spanish, and her students follow along. On the surface, this may seem like a typical foreign language class, but it's far from that. You could walk in during a math, science, or social studies lesson at any point during the day, and you'll likely hear Spanish.
Ale, ale, solita, ale, 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 ale.
Rios is teaching one of the Urbana School District's newest dual language classes, where her students are about evenly divided between native English and Spanish speakers. The dual language curriculum is new for Urbana students this year. Under the program, kindergartners are instructed 90% of the time in Spanish and 10% in English. By fourth and fifth grade, that should level out to about 50-50. Even when students don't understand what she's saying, Rios doesn't revert to English, and the students don't get frustrated. Instead, Rios uses other strategies to translate, like drawings or pantomime.
The objective of this class is not to translate. Probably later on they will be able to translate things. But what it is important is that they understand the second language. I don't want to translate when they don't understand.
Right now, the dual language program in Urbana is being piloted in two kindergarten classes and one first grade class, each at Leal and Prairie Elementary Schools. University of Illinois professor Eurydice Bauer studies bilingual education, and she's helping out with the dual language program at Prairie. She's organized dual language classes around themes that include hands-on activities. For example, at Prairie, she set up lessons about farming.
I can have you plant seeds, and over time, let's talk about the process of that growth. Now we can have something to talk about, but it's not just the teacher doing the talking. The kids have something in front of them that is intriguing to them, that makes them want to talk and want to explore.
Bilingual education isn't a new concept in Illinois. Schools with at least 20 students with limited English proficiency who speak the same language are required to offer transitional bilingual education classes to help them adjust to English. Currently, Urbana offers transitional programs to students who speak Spanish and Chinese. The state currently doesn't have a standardized test that measures bilingual achievement, but it's developing one for kindergartners and first and second graders. Josie Yanguas chairs the Illinois Advisory Council on Bilingual Education. She says there are indications of educational benefits for students who learn a second language.
Students who, particularly who are in dual language programs, when they do take traditional standardized tests, seem to be doing so much better even than those students who are in more traditional general education, English-only environments.
Guadalupe Racconi is the Urbana School District's interim director of bilingual and multicultural programs. She says putting test scores aside, learning another language is about comprehending, processing, and being able to respond to information.
So if the teacher is asking them a question in Spanish and they're able to process that and answer, even if that's in English, that is still showing that they are learning, that they're understanding what the teacher is asking and they're able to produce a response.
But much of that work, preparing students to be bilingual and biliterate, doesn't just happen in the classroom.
Again.
Ada and Charles Stamper live in Urbana with their two children, Aiden, who's in Miss Rios's kindergarten class over at Lille, and Joaquin, who's a second grader, also at Lille. The Stampers regularly play puzzles and word association games with their kids to continue their bilingual education at home.
No, Joaquin went.
Do you?
Daddy. Mio. You both are cheating.
Here's one game with a series of cards laid out on the kitchen table featuring different images, like a sun, a car, and a banana.
Banana. I want a banana. Give me a banana. Is that a banana?
Nope, chewing.
Aiden, cooking.
At home, Charles only speaks English to his kids, while Ada only speaks Spanish.
Yeah, no más.
Esa será la misa.
Está bien, no hay gracias.
A couple of times each week, Ada goes to her kids' classes to copy the lesson plans and replicate them at home. It may sound like overkill, but Ada and Charles say they have an important responsibility as parents.
I'm concerned with my kids. I'm here, I'm just a housewife. I want to they be professionals. I want to they do something better for their lives. And if I don't prepare them for the future, who else will do it?
I'm learning more about their school. I love going to the school and watching and paying attention. They're teaching us as much as we're teaching them. I mean, I never imagined having, bilingual children.
Ada is the co-president of Lille's Parent Teacher Association. She views the dual language program as a major achievement for the area's growing Latino community. While it's helping bring children closer together, she says language and cultural barriers continue to keep some Latino parents from getting involved in the schools and connecting with other parents.
You don't have to be afraid. You don't need to speak English. You just have to be there and try to be involved with your kid. Family is awesome. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. Just you have to try.
The Stampers say their main concern is that there aren't enough bilingual teachers in Urbana, and that's likely going to be an ongoing concern across Illinois. Over the last 5 years, the state has cut more than $10 million in bilingual education funding. Now, having Spanish-speaking kids learn English is one thing, but it's quite another to have English-speaking kids learn Spanish. That's the quandary facing Daniel Bodoni, who's a parent of three students at Lille. Two of his kids are young enough to be in Lille's dual language program. He says he fully supports the new curriculum, but still isn't sure if he'll sign his kids up.
We want to be directly involved with our child's learning. Neither of us are Spanish speakers, and that's part of the barrier. It's harder for us to be directly involved. We still need to decide whether emphasizing dual language up front or emphasizing one language up front and then looking at second languages down the road is preferred. And we really don't have a good answer for that.
As the dual language program expands in Urbana and in other parts of the state, the chair of the Illinois Advisory Council on Bilingual Education says schools shouldn't make it mandatory, as some students may not be ready for a dual language environment. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
And to continue our examination now of bilingual education in Illinois, we are joined by three guests. Uri Bauer is an associate professor in the Language and Literacy Division of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Illinois College of Education. Professor Uri Bauer, welcome to Focus.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. Joseph Wiemelt is interim principal at Urbana High School and director of bilingual programs in the Urbana School District. Principal Wiemelt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Georgia Garcia is a professor also in the Language and Literacy Division of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the U of I's College of Education. Professor Garcia, thank you for joining us as well.
Glad to be here.
As we begin our conversation, we welcome your questions and comments for our guests at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu or find us and comment on Facebook or Twitter. Focus now has its own Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find us on both social media sites at Focus580. That's Focus580. And again, our phone numbers are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Uri Bauer, let me begin with you. What are, in your mind, some of the benefits of being bilingual today?
Well, certainly when we think about kids growing up in a society where I think your earlier piece mentioned about the diversity of our country and so on, when you think about kids being bilingual, there are certain advantages that comes with that. Certainly there are advantages that come in terms of what some of the literature have shown in terms of cognition, in terms of flexibility, of
cognitive flexibility that comes with being bilingual. And certainly those are the kinds of things that people typically try to seek or try to understand that from a cognitive perspective. I would argue that that's a piece of what we need to look at. The other part of what we also need to look at are the other social benefits that come with being bilingual. That on the one hand, you can talk about the metalinguistic awareness that young kids have as a result of being bilingual, those awareness of language basically and its operations and being able to use it and talk about it. But on the other hand, there's also, if you're growing up bilingual, you're also always aware of the fact that you are engaged in this duality and that those languages are not just separate entities that just go about their merry way, but that there are some interactions among those languages and that they mean different things to you. So they have an influence in terms of shaping your identity and the way that you see yourself and hear yourself and place yourself in the world. It has an advantage in terms of helping you appreciate where you're at, but I think often creates an openness toward other cultures, other ways of being, because you understand from the onset that what you have is you're walking two lines, if you will, in the case of talking about bi, mm-hmm. And that this is a normal process and that all of that carries with it certain ways of being, certain ways of knowing. And all of that is an advantage. And often we don't talk about the advantages, really, that comes from being a bilingual.
Georgia Garcia, Yuri Bauer alluded to the notion of some cognitive advantages to learning a second language. How much of that is associated with the idea of learning a second language over time? Do we have any sense of data in terms of learning in a dual language immersive environment like what's being piloted in the Urbana schools that we just heard about?
We have quite a bit of research on that topic now. So, for instance, one of the concerns that many of us have is the performance of language minority children. So, in this case, Spanish-speaking children. And dual language is one of the most effective bilingual ed programs for that population. So we know, for instance, that children who are in a dual language program, by the time they're around 6th to 8th grade, are able to perform at grade level in English, which means they're able to compete with native English-speaking peers and content area subjects like math and science, English, mathematics, whereas students who are in a pull-out ESL-type program or they're in even a transitional bilingual ed program, they do pretty well up through grade 3 competitively, and then after grade 3, they start to fall behind. And part of that is because they don't have the opportunity to continue to learn new content material in Spanish or their native language as they're acquiring English. In terms of the other kids, because dual language, ideally, part of the group are Spanish speakers or language minority children. Part of the group are English speakers whose parents are interested in having them learn second language and learn through that second language. Mm-hmm. Those kids also do very well. So by the time they're also about the same grade level, 5th and 6th grade, they're performing at grade level in English, competing with their English-speaking peers, but they've also acquired a second language. And they haven't just learned that second language for travel purposes. They can actually think, do work in that second language, probably go to college in that second language if they were to continue it. So dream in that second language. They really have an advantage in terms of how they've acquired that second language compared to taking that language in middle school or high school or college.
Joseph Wiemeld, I imagine there might be some saying, well, okay, now wait a minute, though. If you start with students who speak English and you take the time in the classroom to teach them not only to speak Spanish but to learn in Spanish, is that time that is taken away from, would they be able to learn more or more effectively if they didn't learn Spanish but spent all that time learning math and social studies and science and other things? Purely in English. Is there any way to know?
Well, I think, there's still ongoing research and questions around that sort of question. We do know that students, through and the instructional strategies and the methodology that bilingual teachers are able, that they learn through coursework and through their certification process, that they're able to teach in the child's native language or second language, regardless of the content, in a very comprehensible way. so that students, if they are native English speakers, for example, and they're learning math skills in kindergarten in Spanish, they're still able to learn math concepts and learn the language of math in Spanish at a rate that's fairly equivalent to as if they were learning it in English. Now, you can make the argument that some students may be able to do math better in English if they're English speakers at kindergarten level. Maybe so in terms of their oral proficiency talking about math. But the concepts, the numeracy, the ability to add and subtract, that goes across languages. And those are concepts that we're building in either the first or second language. And children, quite honestly, are very flexible in that ability to do that. We're already seeing at the kindergarten level in our dual language programs where the native English speaking students, answering your question in particular, they are doing things in Spanish that are at grade level, at the kindergarten grade level. So they are reading sight words. They are pulling syllables together to start becoming more fluent in their reading in Spanish. They're doing numeracy activities where they're adding or they're counting. They're doing kindergarten standards, kindergarten skills in Spanish. And so we're not seeing necessarily a major gap there in terms of if they would have been in an English classroom.
Well, one of the things we've heard, I think, from teachers over the years, particularly in recent years, is that there's so much that they are mandated to teach, and there's not enough time in the school day to teach it all. Mm-hmm. How does the process of trying to incorporate two languages, learning in two languages, impact that?
Well, I think that goes to, so if we were just in an English-only environment, we would have that concern.
Mm-hmm.
So having that concern in a bilingual environment is no different. There's no advantage either way. So that being said, there's still opportunities for learning experiences in the classroom in either language, and it's not necessarily taking additional time to learn the concept because the student may or may not speak that language. It is continuing as if on the same course sequence, the same curriculum guides at kindergarten level, whether it's in Spanish or English, the curriculum is very similar. The standards that we want all students to be able to meet at the end of kindergarten are the same. But that ability as a teacher to teach bilingually, students are the expectation is that they're still making progress towards those standards in both languages.
And go ahead.
I think perhaps at the heart of that question, too, is perhaps the concern that some people might have in terms of it has to be one or the other, because we can't conceptualize the idea that kids, even very young kids, can transfer information from one to the other. And so the idea that if you learn something, if you learn to read, you learn to read once. The mm-hmm. concept, the notion of reading comes once. How it's done and carried out, you know, all of that can be transferred and used across different languages. Mm-hmm. Concept of learning mathematics. You know, it's something that once a child develops it, it's much easier if you're talking about doing it here in Spanish or in English and so on. And what's, I think, a little difficult for us when we're having conversation around these classrooms is the fact that these kids are showing us really how easy it is for them in some ways to work across those two things and to show us from a research stance what's really possible. In terms of, you can almost flip it. Often we're talking about these kids in terms of what we know about the regular classroom and then the dual, the regular classroom and then the bilingual, or however we're defining it. But in some ways, that's the opportunity for these kids in these dual language classrooms to teach us some more about ways of learning and what kids are potentially really capable of, because it adds this complexity.
The conventional wisdom is that kids are sponges and they can take in all sorts of information. That's why, you know, kids are great at learning, you know, musical instruments, foreign languages, a variety of other things that maybe as we become adults, we seem to struggle a bit more with. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add that I think it's important to point out that the children are not receiving separate instruction in English or in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about taking time away, there's no time that's being taken away. They're actually being taught content, the kindergarten curriculum, through Spanish, and then they're going to be attending art and music and PE and English. So that allows them all to have some English content. And what we're finding is that the Spanish speakers are developing what we call the social skills, conversational skills. And that the English speakers already have that, but they're also developing some cognitive skills through Spanish. So it's not as if there's additional time for language instruction. It's all being done through the curriculum being taught in a particular language.
Joe Wiemelt, you, of course, have started this pilot program with kindergarten classes, so it's classes at Leal and Prairie Elementary Schools. Okay. As I understand it, your plan is then when they get to first grade and on to second grade and continuing through fifth grade, they will continue this process.
Right.
So eventually the entire school will be learning this way. Is that right? No?
A clarification. I guess one thing to clarify in using the term pilot, it's not a pilot. In term, we've made the commitment to the students that start in dual language, they can continue through dual language through fifth grade.
Okay.
The second part of your question about
everyone
being in the program, it's an optional program. So these are classrooms within a school where there's other students that are in your traditional English classrooms. So everyone in the school is not in dual language. It's just those children and parents that signed up for that program or got into that program.
And that gets into a couple of questions I have about the challenges associated with that. One, which is, do you anticipate that it might be more or less challenging to continue this process as they get older? There's a difference between kindergarten curriculum, where you're learning to count, versus third or fourth grade, where you are learning, and maybe math isn't the best example, but a variety of subjects. As the curriculum becomes a bit more sophisticated, does it become more difficult or easier, or is that something you're just going to have to find out?
Well, I think part of it is as we every year is going to present its challenges and opportunities. And we know that through any sort of program or any sort of school, when we're starting a new initiative, there's the initial challenges of implementation. And then as you continue, there's the initial challenge of maintenance and program development and continuous improvement. So to say that there won't be challenges, I would be dishonest in saying there won't be challenges. But the question related to content and the challenges for students as they progress, we also have to remember how students acquire language and how students acquire knowledge. So they're acquiring knowledge and language currently at the kindergarten and first grade level. That language is going to continue to develop as they move up those grade levels with the content that they're developing as well. So in theory, you could argue that by the time they get to those third, fourth, fifth grade, their Spanish and English is, depending on which student you're referring to, will be at the level where they're able to acquire develop the skills necessary to study fourth grade math in Spanish or English or whatever the curriculum looks like in terms of language.
My other question relates to what happens to students who either maybe their parents choose to transfer them out of that classroom into an English-only classroom or a Spanish-only classroom somewhere, or students and parents who want to transfer their child into the program.
So part of that commitment that we – when this program functions as the bilingual program, the required bilingual program that you spoke about earlier in the state of Illinois for our native Spanish-speaking students who have limited English proficiency. But this is still an optional program for them. So in addition to that, English-speaking families who only speak English and are interested in dual language, they are applying into the program and choosing that as well. So if they reach a point where they're signing up for this program and they get in, the commitment is this is a long-term commitment, kindergarten or first grade through fifth grade, with the understanding that life presents its obstacles and life presents change. And so there may be a time where a family may have to move in third grade for whatever. And that's just part of the experience. You know that this is you're signing up for a six-year commitment, and if you move – in theory, ideally, we would like that those students are going to be prepared for whatever they're going to, whether it's in Spanish or English or another dual language school. They're going to be prepared academically and linguistically for that change. And that's what we continue to work for. But understanding that ideally we want parents and families to be and students to be there K through five and on and moving forward.
And there are real rationales behind the commitment, wanting parents to commit to a length of time, recognizing realities, because language acquisition and development takes time. You know, the longer someone's in that program,
the better it is for that child. So we're usually talking about 5 to 7 years to be able to accomplish that. Well, the dual language already takes that into consideration mm-hmm. because it's asking you in the primary grades to give 5 years to that program and getting you, therefore, getting you to that level of knowledge linguistically.
It's interesting you mentioned 5 to 7 years because I think most foreign language programs, when you think in high school and college, most students The requirements are typically 3 years within a given district or
sometimes
a different
two.
Sometimes two. Do we not give enough attention to the idea of learning a second language over a long period of time?
I think the reason lots of times students graduate from high school or from college and maybe can only use the foreign language for travel purposes, but not really to study in another country or to work in that language is because it's short-term instruction. And not only is it only for 2 or 3 years, it's maybe just an hour a day.
Right.
So this type of instruction is very, very different. So this does give them the opportunity to acquire the language in a way that they're actually thinking and learning through that language. So it's a much firmer type of learning that then they can use in school or in work. So it's a different type of level of fluency that they're going to be developing.
And I would say a different kind of person that comes out of it. You know, it's mm-hmm. beyond just the linguistic fluency, you know, going back to some of those other benefits that mm-hmm. come from it, that, you know, the person who has all those skills is someone who's qualitatively different than someone who has far less in regard to those linguistic skills.
Well, in what ways do you think ultimately you want to see students be different? Is it a question of sort of more worldly, more aware of cultural differences? Is that sort of the key distinction that by the time you really learn a second language or really learn a third language, you look at the world differently?
Well, it's certainly an outcome of spending time in a particular language, because I think the simplistic view of language is that it's something, you know, the surface level, what you learn, you know, the grammar, the vocabulary and what have you. But anyone, I think, who considers himself or herself bilingual or multilingual would say, oh, that's just scratching the surface. What really is at the heart of it is the way you see the people who speak that language and appreciate what comes with the utterances that they make that you know you can't quite translate to the other language, although I can tell you what they're kind of saying. You know, what's that all about? That there are ways of capturing things that are embedded in the words that we speak that are culturally, that are contextualized. And so someone who's coming out of those kind of programs, to me, is someone who's a little different than someone who studied French per hour, 1 hour a week or 2 hours a week even at the high school level and has some abilities along that, but there's not enough time. Language is also about time.
So you're saying that half hour a day that I took Latin for 1 year in seventh grade didn't take.
So how are you doing with that Latin? I guess I'll put it that way.
I still remember what porta means. That's pretty much it.
I think one other thing, if I can jump in in regards to that, and specifically in Urbana or any school district that's making the commitment to this two-way dual language immersion, is if we think about it in terms of when these students reach the fifth grade and they're continuing to develop, and by then that's been 6 years or 5 years, they – Our expectation is that they are going to be bilingual in both languages. They are going to be fifth grade academically prepared in either language. And so if you think through the lens of then you get to middle school, and we are considering options for the middle school level to continue this for these students. And then if you think in terms of when they reach high school, the opportunities that they have to take other languages or to take AP Spanish earlier than what your traditional student would take as seniors, the opportunities there to broaden your language abilities or other electives that they may want to take at the high school level just increases mm-hmm. dramatically.
Can I jump in?
Sure.
I think it's interesting. We have the federal government has sort of imposing on the states Common Core state standards. And it's one reason for that is as a country, the U.S. is not doing as well on the international comparisons as they would like. But when you look at the top countries that are doing very well, mm-hmm. and these Common Core standards are designed to help us compete with those countries, they all emphasize multilingualism. accurately. That's something that did not show up in the Common Core state standards. I find that very interesting that those countries all emphasize multilingualism. Their students all acquire more than one other language, but usually two languages, maybe three languages, in addition to their home language. And part of that has to do with globalization and the opportunity to be economically competitive in an increasingly global society where you have to interact and work with others. I think kids that come out as a product of dual language will be positioned well for that new world.
I want to talk a little bit about the political implications of all of this, because there are political implications inherent in this discussion. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guests are Georgia Garcia and Yuri Bauer. They are in the Language and Literacy Division of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Illinois College of Education. Also with us is Joseph Wiemelt. He's interim principal at Urbana High School and director of bilingual programs in the Urbana School District. And we welcome your questions and comments. Do you speak more than one language, or have you forgotten everything you learned in French class in high school? When do you think it is best for students to learn more than one language, and in what context? Or do you think the priority should be to teach English language skills well and that other languages should be taught separately in their own classes? Let us know what you think. Give us a call at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome questions and comments on our brand spanking new Focus Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find us on both social networks at Focus 580. That's Focus 580. And we will talk more after a short break. This is Focus. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing bilingual education on today's program and learning more about a pilot program. A program underway in two of Urbana's elementary schools in which students are immersed in both English and Spanish throughout the school day, mostly, I guess, in Spanish in kindergarten and first grade, right? Our guests are Georgia Garcia and Yuri Bauer. They teach in the College of Education at the University of Illinois. Joseph Wiemelt is also with us. He's interim principal at Urbana High School and director of bilingual programs at the Urbana School District. We welcome your questions and comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we will begin this morning with Bobby in Champaign. Hi, Bobby. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I am calling in support of this type of program. I lived in the 70s for 6 years as an adult in Germany with children in, one English speaker, our son we took with us, and then we adopted a child there. So we had a German and an English speaker in the family. But during the 70s, there were a lot of people in Germany, guest workers from Yugoslavia, from Spain, from Turkey. And what I noticed was that if people had a good basic education, they did much better. They were much more successful in German society. The people from Yugoslavia had a really good basic education, and they learned German much more accurately, and they were functioning at a higher level than the people from Spain and Turkey who had a less good basic education. So the knowledge absolutely transfers. The knowledge is not really language-based, and it's not just knowledge of the language. Other knowledge is independent, really, of the language. And then also I learned...
We're starting to lose you there. My apologies to our caller. Some technical issues there with her connection. But she was getting at the point that I think we were talking about just before the break, the fact that maybe in some ways this is something that the rest of the world caught on to a long time ago, that maybe is something that in time will be expanded here in the United States. Georgia?
Well, I would hope so. I don't know. We tend to have more of an English-only perspective in the U.S., and so we're not always as involved in making sure that our students and our population can speak languages other than English. So I think it depends on the political climate and the fact that they don't have multilingualism or even second language or foreign language education included in the Common Core standards. I do find somewhat disconcerting. Yuri, I know that you've traveled and live in Germany. You want to talk about the caller's comments?
Yeah, I was just thinking it through as she was describing it. I think when we think about immigrants in Germany, it's a little bit more, it's a lot more complex than it would appear on the surface. what's interesting about some of those results that Georgia Garcia was mentioning in terms of international reports, one of the things that got Germany really up and moving was the idea that in 2000 that they found that when compared worldwide that their immigrant population, schools, there was quite a bit of difference among across schools. Mm-hmm. And some of those distinctions were whether or not that school had number of kids from Turkey, number of kids from different language. They call it kids with immigration background, or and it means different things to them in terms of that. So that became a really big issue for them in terms of we thought we took care of this in the 70s because back then there were programs and things that were aimed at that. And they found that they were, in comparison worldwide, they were actually struggling and they were doing far worse in some regard than the U.S. In meeting the needs of kids. And that shocked them because they didn't see themselves in that way. More recently, I actually spent some time in some of those schools where kids are have a large percentage of kids with this immigration background and try to get an understanding of these kids and how they view themselves and so on. It's much more than language, as we've been saying, that goes on in terms of. So it's harder for me to say, for example, it's just an issue of the fact that the Turkish kids come from the background that is more impoverished in some way or another. I think there are other issues that also play come into play that makes it much more difficult at times for these kids to play in that environment as well.
We started to talk a little bit about the politics of all this, and Joe Wiemelt, I understand you're examining the political implications of bilingual education as you pursue your PhD.
Correct. Right? Yep.
There are, of course, always divisions, and often political, about the best way to educate kids. What, if any, concerns tend to come up in the political arena over the idea of teaching in multiple languages in public schools outside of traditional foreign language classes?
Well, I think within the U.S. in particular, it is geographically influenced, and it is education is very much state-specific. So there are different state policies that are either pro or anti bilingual education or multilingual education.
In fact, some states have banned bilingual education outright. Arizona,
right.
Massachusetts, Colorado, or excuse me, California.
Right. So in the ongoing argument there from both sides politically is about how to best educate our students and our in these states or across in a larger aspect across the country. And so what we do know, though, is that within the education world, primarily the literature, research studies, we know how successful bilingual education is, and we know how well students do in more additive bilingual programs. But oftentimes these policies are set and passed without necessarily understanding the research behind the policies that they're setting. And so you can take a look at how students are performing in those states who come from a language minority background, and you can see that they are not in their English acquisition has not improved in terms of requiring English only education. Their academic achievement has not improved since they've moved to this sort of educational model, and in some places it has actually gotten worse due to these restrictive language policies.
Well, but let me throw this out to all of you and just ask. I mean, I've heard the sentiment. The goal should be to teach all kids in U.S. public schools English, encourage the ability to communicate in foreign languages, but have them learn that outside of in separate foreign language classes. Learn math, science, history, everything else in English, but then set aside time to learn foreign languages. What's wrong with that?
Well, one misconception when we start talking about bilingual education is automatically lots of folks just see Spanish or just think Spanish, and it's a Spanish-only program. Bilingual education is not one language. Inherently, bilingual is two languages. And so to make the argument that we need to focus on English and then another language has to be somewhere else outside of school or whatnot is it's a very problematic sort of statement. Within bilingual education, one of the main goals is English acquisition and academic achievement in English, in addition to academic achievement in another language, in our case in Urbana, in Spanish. And so we know based on research and what we've just talking about in history, trying to learn it outside of the day-to-day schooling environment in a bilingual model is very, very difficult. And most people who take one to two languages or one to two classes of language or years of a language in high school don't acquire that language very well at all.
Actually, to not provide second language learners, language minority children, with services that are going to help them do well in school is illegal. So I find that interesting.
Well,
so
you're talking about those who speak Spanish and need to learn English as a second language.
Not just Spanish speakers.
I mean, that's mandated by the state.
Was mandated by the federal government.
So, but I'm talking about those who say, no, we encourage, and yes, whatever is mandated, that should be taught, but it does not need to be taught all day long in every subject. Seems to be different here.
Yeah, but right? It's not taught all day long in every subject. So I think Joe is correct in pointing out that bilingual education means instruction in a native language and in English. But one of the rationales for it is back before we had Lowell versus Nichols, which is a Supreme Court decision, that was a case. That was Chinese-speaking parents who were complaining. So that was the case that occurred in 1974 in San Francisco, in which the Chinese-speaking parents, and lots of times people have this myth that all Chinese-speaking kids are going to do well. So this is an interesting court case. Chinese-speaking parents were very concerned that their kids were not doing very well in school, and they thought it was because the fact that they were second-language learners of English was not being addressed. They were placed in all English classrooms, and the kids were not doing well. And lots of times Chinese parents have Chinese schools for the kids on the weekends. That was not enough. So they wanted the school district to have to do something to help their kids perform better in school. So that was a Supreme Court decision that you couldn't just place kids in all English classrooms and let them take Chinese as a foreign language or get Chinese outside of school. So bilingual ed is one of the remedies for that situation. But you know, a long time ago, kids did do that. All their instruction was in English, and if they got any instruction in their native language, it would be because parents would get together and try to provide it. But they weren't doing well. I mean, we have the data. They just weren't doing well. And part of the rationale for bilingual ed is that students are continuing to get content knowledge in their native language as they're acquiring English. Without that content knowledge, you run into a situation where, let's say, they're getting ESL instruction, and it takes, 4 or 5 years before their English is good enough for them to begin to really learn content in English. Well, that's too long to wait. They've lost all this content knowledge. They're not going to be able to graduate from high school and do well. So that's one of the rationales for bilingual ed, is that we want to keep them involved learning academically as they're acquiring English, and then they can transfer it across.
We have a number of folks waiting on the line, so I want to try and get to a few more calls, and we'll go next to Steve in Urbana. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I guess it's a two-part question, and perhaps they're related. I would imagine that the experience of an English-speaking child in kindergarten in the Spanish-speaking program that they have at Lille is quite different than the experience of a Spanish-speaking child being immersed in an English-speaking class in central Illinois, because they go out into a world from school immersed in and with friends and with media in an English-speaking environment, whereas the English-speaking child who is being immersed in Spanish may go home to an environment which is totally where Spanish is totally foreign, and friends may not be speaking Spanish, and the media that they're confronted with. So I'd imagine that experience is very different. And I also wonder what the impact is then on the socialization of the child, a lot of which, as you know, takes place in primary school, who is immersed, especially an English-speaking child who is immersed in the Spanish-speaking program.
I think I can speak in terms of, specifically the question is related to our schools in Urbana, and what we're seeing is that relationship piece between students in these classrooms is very unique. So this is observational data or kind of anecdotal data from parents and kids, and kind of what we're seeing is that these native Spanish-speaking students within this 90% of the day in Spanish are taking leadership roles. They're viewed as the language models. They are teaching, and they're like mini teachers, so to speak, in the classroom. And they are viewed as the students who are in these leadership roles, which is an interesting idea to think about in terms of bilingual education or education in general. The English-speaking students within that classroom are also it's being viewed at, in terms of the parents that we've spoken with or the just the general observations. We're seeing that students are interacting with each other in very interesting ways bilingually. They're using the language resources that they have to communicate with each other across languages, and they're working collaboratively at the kindergarten level to support each other. And it's been a very interesting process with that socialization that the caller was asking about. It has actually been very beneficial in terms of that socialization piece.
And I would say that socialization can be looked at within an additive or subtractive kind of modeling, right? So when we're looking at the English speaker in both contexts, in the dual language, it's an additive kind of model where you're adding on to things and building from there. Versus, I think, the context that the caller mentioned where you're in central Illinois in an all-English context or a Spanish speaker and kind of put in that context, it's much more it is a subtractive kind of model. There is no support for that that first language. And that view that Mr. Vimal is talking about in terms of seeing yourself as a leader, that the language you speak is important and that those around you will seek to speak it, all of that gets removed within that context and stripped down.
Let me try and get in one more call. At least Brenda is on the line next. Brenda, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm on the Interstate 74, so if I lose you, it's my fault. I have two questions. One is, how does the teacher decide the percentage of time taught teaching in English and teaching in Spanish? And the second one is, you're talking about students achieving at grade level. What about students who come in above grade level and really need some enrichment? How is that managed in this kind of a situation? And I'll hang up and listen online. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Those are two wonderful questions. In terms of the percentage of language allocation within a program model, that is from a programmatic stance, it's kind of predetermined. So in Urbana specifically, we worked through a dual language advisory committee composed of teachers, parents, community members, professors, administrators, and we collectively worked together to look at what research is showing, to look at the different types of language allocation models within dual language. And we chose as a group 90-10 model that transitions to half the day in English and half the day in Spanish. So this is established for teachers. They know what the language percentage is in their particular grade level. And we have we've worked through curriculum guides to support what is taught when, in what language, how much time of the day is devoted to that language, et cetera. So that's pretty kind of predetermined. The other question in regards to students who move in are above level, one of the benefits of dual language immersion for either language group is the idea of it can be very much viewed, as Dr. Bauer was talking about, as an additive model for both students, which you can also look at through the lens of an enrichment model. So if this is a student who's coming in, let's say either group, and is performing at the third grade level, but their age is first grade. So now, instead of, you know, first grade, if it's an English speaker, they're still eligible, depending on when they move in, to go into a dual language model. So now they're getting differentiated instruction in the classroom, as they should. The teacher is challenging those students academically, as they should. And now you're adding on another language to that for that student. So this student who maybe would have only had it in English in a typical first grade classroom now is getting that challenge of a second language, which we know cognitively is very rewarding and beneficial.
I'm afraid we are out of time, but I want to say thank you to our guests this morning. Joseph Wiemelt is interim principal at Urbana High School and director of bilingual programs in the Urbana School District. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Yuri Bauer is an associate professor in the Language and Literacy Division of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction in the College of Education at the University of Illinois. Professor Bauer, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Georgia Garcia is a professor also in the Language and Literacy Division. And everything else I just said at the University of Illinois. Professor Garcia, thank you as well.
My pleasure.
We welcome any additional thoughts you may have about today's program on our website. That's will.illinois.edu/focus. As always, if you know anybody who might enjoy hearing this program but lives outside of our listening area, let them know we stream the program live every day at will.illinois.edu. You can also listen back to past programs there. Focus is also available as a free downloadable podcast, and we also rebroadcast it weeknights at 8 o'clock on AM 580. On tomorrow's show, we will discuss video games. Following a spate of recent shootings, including the devastating shooting late last month at Sandy Hook Elementary School, as politicians, pundits, and the public have sought to identify what to do to address so many incidents of gun violence, gory and graphic video games have been cited, usually by those in opposition to any restrictions on gun sales. But nevertheless, those concerns have been raised and have long been raised about video games, just like violence on television, in the movies, and comic books, and most anywhere else in popular culture. There's also no question that video games today are more realistic than they have ever been, and the concern is that such realism may be desensitizing some to the violence displayed. We'll discuss any potential connections between violence and video games. We'll also talk with a game developer about why violent video games seem to have so much appeal to the public. That's on tomorrow's program. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft was our technical director. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.